That's a good point.
We're going to call the agenda for the Special Budget Committee, Senate Special Budget Committee, to order for June 15, 2005. We got public hearing work session on Senate Bill 5610, work session on Senate Bill 311 and 421. Probably only going to do public hearing on 152 and 71. So adjust your calendars accordingly. Let's start up with Senate Bill 5610 relating to financial administration, Rackmaster Settlement Agreement.
Chair and committee members, today before you, I place before you right under the agenda staff measure summary for draft staff measure summary for Senate Bill 5610-5610-1 amendments and a copy of House Bill 5076, which the contents of which are being put into, would be put into 5610 based on the dash one amendments. As amended, 5610 will basically authorize the transfer of tobacco master settlement funds for four basic purposes, and they're outlined in the bill and in the staff measure summary for you. Approximately $86.7 million would be allocated for the payment of debt service on the Oregon appropriation bond funds that were issued during the rebalance actions during the 2001-2003 biennia. Approximately $32 million for debt service payments on OHSU's bond fund to pay debt service on the opportunity bonds. There was approximately $200 million in bonds that were sold for the expansion of the bioscience research programs, and this is an ongoing obligation for approximately 20 years. The after the debt service transfers, the bill authorizes transfer of $700,000 to the Department of Justice for the tobacco enforcement activities carried on within the Criminal Justice Division of Department of Justice. And the last transfer is for $24.5 million, which would be allocated to the Department of Human Services for support of the Oregon Health Plan.
Do you want to sign up sheet from 71 and
82? The bill is simply the transfer bill, and as such, there, the limitations for expenditure of these funds are going to be contained and have been contained in the individual budgets for these agencies. So this is just the substantive legislation that allows the transfer of those funds for the uses I just described. If you wish to have any testimony on it, the Department of Administrative Services did pre-session file this on behalf of the governor. That was what was pre-session filed in House Bill 5076. And the amendments that are before you exactly replace the contents of that bill, because that bill was in joint ways and means when the budget process was separated. So we put the contents of that in 5610.
Okay. Anyone feel a burning desire to comment on the new Senate Bill 5610? Very good. Senator Morse.
Just a question, not a comment. To what extent, if any, does this vary from the past or the present biennium?
OHSU is getting a heck of a lot more money than they had in the past.
That's correct. Chair and committee members, the debt service on the OHSU opportunity bonds last biennium was approximately $9.6 million. So there is a significant roll-up on that. I don't have the exact figures for the roll-up on the growth appropriation bonds. I don't expect there was one, because a significant one anyway. So yeah, the $700,000 is consistent with what was provided last biennium, and the $24.5 million is comparable as well. And the rest of the funds from that account would be available to deal with flow issues. The reason we're giving some of these funds up now in advance of the debt service is that some of those payments have to be made during this biennium. There'll be funds left in the account that'll be carried over to help us with debt service payments that'll be made in the first of the next biennium and prior to the next tobacco settlement payment. So,
good question. Other questions?
Would you like a motion, Mr. Chair?
That'd be excellent, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments into 5610.
Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I would move...
Let's see, let me open the other session first, and then go ahead. He did very well.
Would you like me to remove the...
Nah, it's okay. Go ahead.
Dash ones. The... okay, I move Senate Bill 5610 as reported by LFO and amended to the full Senate Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate the help. All right, we'll go to work session on Senate Bill 311.
Where's my pen?
Yes, that's it.
I stole my pen.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 311 is in front of this committee for the purposes of amending the bill to provide the other funds expenditure limitation increase in order to implement the bill. The bill requires the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt rules regulating medical examinations in workers' compensation claims. The fiscal impact of the bill is described in the attached fiscal impact statement. It's $525,608. And there is a dash A7 amendment that increases the limitation by that amount.
Nice job. any concerns? We've had public hearing on the bill already. We're just worried about the fiscal. This is theoretically sort of a Ways and Means Committee still, and so we're mostly interested in the fiscal aspects here. Any discussion? Senator Moore?
No comment. Question. Could you identify the source of these funds?
This would come from the workers' compensation assessments. And I believe that DCDS indicated, yes, it's on the fiscal impact, that this will not affect the workers' compensation assessment rates charged to employers.
Thank you.
Good question. Other questions?
I don't have a question, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to say that I think that particularly living in remote areas where many times medical examinations are required, that are in the valley for coastal residents, and this gives a clearer process for people going through the workman's compensation program, and I'm glad to see that the director has some direction for this.
Mm-hmm. Good bill. Any further discussion? Any objection?
Do you have a motion?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 311 as amended to the Senate full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Objection? Seeing none? So ordered.
Carry that.
Senator Westland, you want to carry that one?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
All right, let's open a work session on Senate Bill 421, the State Building Code.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 421 requires the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to establish building code administrative regions for all areas of the state. The bill is in front of this committee for the purpose of increasing the other funds limitation and staffing for DCBS in order to implement the requirements of the bill. The fiscal impact is described on the attached fiscal impact statement. It is $320,634 other funds. And the source of the funds is identified in the bill. It imposes a surcharge on permit fees and hourly charges to defray the cost of administering and enforcing state building codes.
Any questions? Discussion? This also had a public hearing upstairs. Is there a motion, I guess?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 421 as amended to the full Senate committee with a due pass recommendation. Well, I guess, I better move the the dash A4s into, I move the A4s into Senate Bill 421.
Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 421 as amended by the A4s to the full Senate Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. So ordered. How about Senator Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can I just back up half a second? I know some of the people in the audience that were very much involved in Senate Bill 311 are in attendance, and I just want to say I think this is some of the best work that at least I've personally seen this session, so thank you, guys.
All righty. Next item on the agenda is a public hearing on Senate Bill 152. Public hearing process. And hear from staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have, before you or at your place, you have the fiscal impact statements for Senate Bill 152, which authorizes the issuance of lottery bonds to finance construction of passenger terminal at North Bend Airport, and the bill or the fiscal impact shows what the debt service cost would be. This would be a transfer in the form of a grant to the North Bend Airport District monies for construction of the building. We also have amendments which clean up the language in the original bill to allow for the sale of the bonds in a timely way that can be then distributed to North Bend Airport. So you have a dash two amendment in front of you as well. Only thing I also wanted to point out to you on the fiscal impact is that the debt service costs are not included in the Senate or House budget plan and will need to be considered in balancing the state budget as it moves along.
For the record, the impact in this biennium and next biennium debt service is?
Debt service will be about $750,000 in the 05-07 biennium and $1.2 million in the 07-09 biennium.
Discussion by the committee on this at all? Yes, go ahead.
Susie, does it go up after 07-09, or does that level off at about that rate? And what's the amortization?
Mr. Chair, it levels off at about about $1.2 million in the next biennium after that. Total amortization is $18.9 million.
And the term of the indebtedness?
25 years.
25?
20 years. Excuse me. 20.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Anyone want to give extremely brief testimony on this bill? Because I think it did get some discussion upstairs, as I recollect, in the Chair's committee.
I think it got a lot of discussion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And a lot of positive support. And the discussion here to be about the dash two amendments, which has slightly revised the timing of the bonds. Seeing none, okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 152. Let's open the public hearing on Senate Bill 71. Oh, Arnie,
I just want to say a few moments.
Well, please come right up. We'll reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 152.
Sorry about that.
Representative Roebling.
Chair Schrader and committee, my name is Arnie Roebling. I'm representative from District 9, Coos Bay to Florence. I didn't get a chance to speak the last time we were doing some things, and it appeared that this would be an opportunity to come and talk to this committee. This is an issue that has been important to me for a number of years. I began with some public service in a group called FONSI, which stands for Friends for New and Sustainable Industry in Coos Bay, a number of years ago, and was the co-chair of that group. And one of the first issues that came up was the North Bend Airport. and the functioning of it with the city of North Bend. And so a group of business people and others, along with North Bend and the port, worked out a situation where the port of Coos Bay could handle and work manage the airport. We worked on a bond issue that an issue in the community that eventually happened. And as that worked through its process, it became clear that having another special district that could manage the airport was really the best way to go. So again, we went back to the voters in our communities in the county and asked them to look at this airport, and they again voted to make a special district. A number of the board members are here today. And as we looked at the long-term viability of the airport, we had a number of plans in place. Interestingly enough, with Bandon Dunes opening, much of the planning that had been done changed dramatically. The number of private planes that were coming in, the combination of having our terminal for commercial and the area for the private planes and the commercial planes got more and more crowded, and it was clear that we were going to need to do some things with the airport. And the community has stepped forward. Also, we have applied for and received numerous grants, federal ones, to work on a tower and so on. And there was a discussion about where to move the terminal, and looking at that, it became clear that this new terminal would be the best place to separate the two, the commercial and the private landing areas or staging areas. That was an important deal. Then we started looking at how to get the money, and a number of people came together. This bill is the result of that. The North Bend Airport is a critical part of the transportation infrastructure in our communities. That with rail and with the roads, the airport has continued to grow and prosper with regard to the number of airplanes that are coming there and the people coming to and from, and for getting materials out of Coos Bay for our economy. So that need for economic growth spurred the introduction of this bill as well. As I look at the investment, I recognize that the investment by the state to the south part of the state, South Coast and Coos County, is really an important one. Our lifeline outside of the area are our roads, which we continue to work on, our rail, which we continue to work on, and this airport. We need more than anything else this investment so that we can continue the growth that we've begun and help the businesses that are there, in particular those in the South County and at Bandon and all of the South Coast. Driving all the way to Eugene to get an airplane out is oftentimes difficult for people. There are times when it's almost impossible, and the plane and the airport is that lifeline for us. So I really encourage you as a committee to look carefully at this bill and to support the growing area of the South Coast by the passage of this Senate Bill 152. Right. And I'd be glad to answer any questions, too.
Thank you very much, Representative. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Since we get... Oh, Senator Burch, please.
Mr. Chairman, just looking around the room, and I see the number of people that have driven a distance to come today just to show their support, and I want to thank them for that. Whether it's needed or not needed, you were here to say it's important to you. Mr. Chair, I also want to thank the members of the committee and my colleagues in the Senate who have been so supportive of this project and recognizing it as an economic development project that affects all of Oregon. And while it is refers to the North Bend Airport, it is in no way such a limited sideboards on this kind of project. And so my thanks to you, Mr. Chair, as well, in continuing with the hearings and with the much discussion that has taken place on this project.
Appreciate that. We just got the Dash 2 amendments. Give everyone a chance to read that. That's part of the reason we're just going to hold over the actual work session portion. I, too, appreciate everyone. It's been a lot of work. Senator Berger's been incessant in her support of this bill, and I appreciate that and made a very convincing case with the members, so as Representative Roblin and others, and I appreciate everyone's efforts, because sometimes we forget there's all of Oregon. It doesn't all come out of PDX. There's other things that help us grow and develop, and I appreciate that. Did you want to testify, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. and members of the commission. My name is Claire Jones. I'm the chairman of the Coos County Airport District. We have with us today another board member, Helen Burnell Monroe, Mr. Gary Letellier, our executive director, and Hank Hickok from Bandon Dunes. And we do not want to take up much time, but we're here to answer any questions or concerns that you may have about this this project. And if that's that's really about all I want to say. I don't want to take up a lot of time, but if you have questions, we'll have Gary sit here and Mr. Hickok and go at it.
I guess the only question I would have is if anyone's had a chance to look at the Dash 2s and has, you know, an opinion at this point in time, we'd entertain that. We'll have another opportunity, you know, hopefully very shortly. So, very good. Thank you, sir. Thank you
for coming up. Mr. Chair, yes, sir. If you were able to push the button on this project, say, January 106, how long will it take you to finish the improvements?
Well, I'm not...
ballpark, back of the envelope.
2 years. Approximately, and Gary could probably answer that better than I could, but we're ready to go now, so if I were able to push the button and get the okay, we'd go at it tomorrow, because we're ready with the engineers and the architects at that point. So,
well, thank you for being here.
I have one other comment. I would really like to just put it on the record of our committee of our special thanks to Senator Berger, the author of this bill, for her tireless work and efforts to help get this going. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is a question best addressed to Mr. Letellier, knowing that the federal grant money comes into the state of Oregon at a rate of over 9-1. What's the federal participation in your entire renovation program at North Bend?
In this project? Well,
the totality of all the improvements that you're making.
In phase one of our capital plan, which...
Could you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. My name is Gary Letellier. I'm the executive director of the Coos County Airport District. In phase one of our capital improvement program, which we're in right now, in which this Senate Bill 152 would partially fund, we have a total participation in federal funds, federal airport grant funds of $11,544,870 and another $3 million in 100% earmark from the Congress. So that's the federal share for the first phase of this total project, which would be $32.2 million.
Thank you.
Very good. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Very good. And then we'll close the public hearing session for Senate Bill 152. Let's go to Senate Bill 71. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 71. Staff, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You have in front of you the fiscal impact statement for Senate Bill 71. The bill authorizes the issuance of lottery bonds to establish the multimodal transportation fund, and there are many people out in the audience who know many more details about this bill than I do, but it is to be used to provide grants and loans for the air, marine, public transit, and rail transportation projects, which are not able to access our highway trust funds for improvement and are a very important part of our transportation system. The fiscal impact shows that there will be some personal service costs from the Department of Transportation to establish the administrative rules, review the projects, do some contracting, there's some Attorney General costs involved in that. So they estimate that there would be about a third of six staff, existing staff. They wouldn't add staff. They'd reprioritize some of their existing staff's workload to absorb the cost. But the bill prohibits the use of highway transportation monies for any of these projects, so that it would have to come out of the proceeds from this bond or the interest that is earned on the fund. The fiscal impact anticipates that about roughly half of the lottery bonds would be sold in May of 2006 and the other half in March of 2007 to be placed into the fund. There would be a debt service of $2.7 million in the 05-07 biennium from lottery funds on the 20-year tax-exempt bonds. And the roll-up cost in 07-09 on the debt service would be approximately $20 million. Total debt service over the life of the bonds is $191 million to be repaid in 2027. Again, the debt service on these bonds is not anticipated in either the House or the Senate budget plan and will have to be accommodated in balancing the state budget.
Any comments on the fiscal statement as presented by LFO?
Mr. Chair, we also have an amendment that was brought to the Legislative Fiscal Office from the Senate Majority Office. It changes Section 5, which distributes the project by congressional district on a percentage basis. Section 5 changes that to requiring the Transportation Commission to select transportation projects equitably distributed throughout the state. I don't know anything else about the amendments.
So I know we have enough copies for him. We'll get you copies. This is another reason we're not going to move the bill today.
Put them on the table.
Oh, okay, good. Hopefully you get some copies. You guys can peruse that. But there's the two changes, page 2, line 22, period after entities, and delete the rest of that sentence, allowing others to access the funds, even if you're in excess of $40 million annual revenue.
Mr. Chair, which line is that?
That's line 22 on page 2.
Thank you.
Period after entities, and then delete the rest of that line. And then again, as LFO referenced on page 3, section 5 is deleted, which was the going by congressional district for appropriation with substitute language that says equitably distributed throughout the state, but leaving the discretion to the Oregon Transportation Commission. And we haven't had much chance to vet that. That's pretty much a policy decision. We try not to do too much of that down here unless people have had a chance to agree that those changes are appropriate. So I guess I'm open to some comments if there's anyone that would like to testify either on the fiscal or the amendments. Take a few brief comments.
Mr. Chair, my name is Stuart Foster. I'm from Medford, Oregon. I'm chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission. In September of 2004, the governor requested that our commission assess what the state's needs were in regard to connecting all modes. And he asked us to engage the various system stakeholders, marine, rail, transit, and air in that dialogue, and to come up with what with solid and practical methods of making of what investments were needed to connect the systems. Mm-hmm. And as a result of our assessment, you have Senate Bill 71 that's before you. The Oregon Transportation Commission fully supports investments in connecting our various modes. We believe it's absolutely critical to the economy of the state to mitigate against the rapidly growing freight pressure on our system and the congestion on our system. We believe that such investments will result in creating more jobs and, frankly, improve the economy and protect the economy by giving us more opportunities and more varied ways to move goods, people, and and to improve the economy through better connections and a more efficient transportation system. So we would, because the transportation system has to be global. It has to be, you know, it just isn't roads. It's got to be, it's air, it's rail, it's transit, and it's marine. And we really need to do a better job of connecting all those modes, so that they're all, frankly, so that they're all used more efficiently and effectively than they are. And this is a step forward in doing that. I would urge you to move this bill. I'd also say that we're supportive of the proposed amendment that would change the criteria from congressional districts to equitably distributed throughout the state, or whatever the exact language is. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, Ms. Foster? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Foster, for your testimony. As I think about Oregon in between California and Washington, I believe, and I'm asking for your validation on this, that our sister states have made substantial investments, somewhat calling Oregon out for our failure to do so. Could you make any comment on that and what the effect, if we don't go forward with some multimodal improvements, how will that affect us in between Oregon and Washington as we are?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, they have made significant investments, probably not the degree they really need to make, our sister states. I mean, I think that it's a problem that's pretty universal, at least to the West Coast of the United States. If we're going to remain competitive, if our ports are going to be competitive, if our airports are going to be competitive, we have to have those kind of connections so that we can efficiently deliver goods between the modes. And if we don't have those kind of connections, then we're not going to be able to compete in the world marketplace.
Senator Berger?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Foster, thank you for your always willingness to continue serving and helping us in the state of Oregon. Connect Oregon is vital, in my opinion, to the economy of our future. But when you're in this building and you're trying to work things through, as you know from having served with your commission, there are concerns that come up, and we always face that with rural Oregon. And so when you see the specificity of congressional districts, in a way it worked against rural Oregon because you have three in the Portland area. So as far as making some change, but I think there is a real concern, and I'd just like to elevate that on your radar, that of the sensitivity of rural Oregon in wanting to be more specific in knowing that there's going to be some geographical spread in addressing those issues. Also, the Dash 5 amendments addresses loans and grants. And in the original bill, it was only grants, and we tried to address the concern of those who felt that there should be loans involved. So what you're seeing in some of the language that is now removed, if we were to accept the Dash 5 amendments, and that is compromise language. And doesn't mean it's the perfect compromise, doesn't mean it's the perfect language. It just means that those are some of the issues that we need to address in order to make Connect Oregon all that everyone wants it to be.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, could I respond briefly to that? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Berger. Our commission, as I'm sure you know, is very sensitive to rural issues, and we work hard to balance rural and urban issues. We're a one Oregon, in our opinion, and I would probably be the first to admit that we're not perfect, but we really try hard to, and I can assure you that if this amended language is approved, that we will do everything in our capacity to deal equitably with the entire state, because that's our charge, and we need to make these investments where they make the most sense, but we also need to be sensitive to the needs of both the urban and rural communities. In regard to the loan versus grant language, I would just hope that it would be as broad as possible or as flexible as possible so that we could have the opportunity to maximize the benefits of the funds that we have available. There obviously are some situations that would lend themselves probably very well to a loan. There are other situations where you absolutely, the only way you're going to get this done is through a grant. Our commission has a history, as many of you know, of looking at these sort of things very carefully. We try to stretch the dollars as far as we can and maximize the benefit for the entire state. So I would hope that we would be able to come up with flexible language in regard to that issue.
So if I may follow up, Senator B., your understanding that the commission would be most likely to do some loans and some grants?
I think that it, you know, obviously it depends on what the proposals are before us, but it seems to me that and I can't give you any specifics obviously at this stage, but it seems to me that based upon analogous situations that we've had in the past, that there clearly are some cases that really work well with loans, and some communities, for example, in some situations, you can't achieve the goal you want to achieve through a loan, but you really need to get that bottleneck taken care of, and so that probably is going to have to be a grant.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In looking at Section 4 and following on your comments where it gives guidance to the Transportation Commission in selecting projects where they have taken input from the various boards or advisory groups that function around the different modes, I'm curious to what the role of the Area Commissions on Transportation might be. And I apologize for not having told you I would ask this. My reason for raising it at this juncture is that with respect to highway projects, it's my observation that those area commissions are functioning at a very high level. I have seen them work through some very dicey issues in between regions where projects were not ready to go and the money could be given to another area, or in a case that you're acutely aware of, a project was turned down and the money was then, I think, very reasonably sent in other places. And the point that I'm asking for your reaction to is that those commissions seem to be functioning well. Is there a role for them in at least vetting some of the projects before they come directly to the OTC?
It probably would be on a project-by-project basis. You'd have to look at it. But as you well know, Senator Johnson, we really believe in those area commissions, and you really hit the nail right on the head on how effective they are. And particularly the most recent example that you used, that we're extremely proud of how they work through this process. So we use them to a tremendous degree on an advisory basis. So obviously any decisions are going to have to be in consultation with marine, air, transit, rail, but it also is very appropriate in particular places to have it vetted at the local act level too.
Mr. Chair, just to make sure that I understand, thank you for your answer. I think just as a postscript, the reason that those acts work well is that the commission has empowered them and trusts them, and that is clear in the relationship. But let's go back again to Section 4, and I'm going to use aviation just because I know it the best. As I understand the mechanics of this bill, different projects would be available. They would come then before the State Aviation Board, be vetted there, or at least a first cut would be made on the planning, the efficacy, the community engagement, and the level of community acceptance of the project. And then would the Oregon Transportation Commission accept recommendations from that board so that for a project to finally make its way to your decision making table, it would have gone through a number of levels of review. Is my understanding of this bill language correct with respect to that input?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I I think that, and I don't have the bill language in front of me, but my sense of it is that it is extremely important. Obviously, we should not be moving forward with an issue on airports without having the buy-in and the sound advice of the stakeholders there and their commission or board. So yes, it seems to me that you'd have to vet that through those agencies and boards.
One last follow-up, Mr. Chair, because I didn't mean to act as an aviation advocate. That's a change for me. But what I was really driving at was, despite the fact that for most of us in this room, $100 million is a jaw-dropping amount of money. If you look at the magnitude of some of the projects that may be coming up through the pipeline, just that I'm aware of in a very narrow area, $100 million goes very quickly. And I'm thinking the competitive pressure on this money, knowing that we have been delinquent in making investments in our other modes, I'm just worried how the commission, other than the geographic equity argument, the mechanics that you're going to use when the projects will outnumber the available resources, and this is going to be a very competitive exercise for your commission, even a high-functioning commission like yours, to go through to make sure that you satisfy the pent-up need.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, well, first of all, we're not going to be able to satisfy the pent-up need. I think that point was well made for you. It kind of reminds me of the situation with OTIA 3 on the freight projects, which I think we had $300 million for, and there was $1.5 billion in applications, and probably 90% of those are very well taken. We are going to have to make some strategic decisions. There is just no question that you're right, $100 million, in the total scheme of things, is an important step forward, but it's not going to. I mean, there's huge issues out here, and so the most important thing, it seems to me, is that our commission is going to have to be very strategic within the bounds of regional equity and the other bounds of that bill. We're going to have to be very strategic on where we spend that money. We're going to have to work as hard as we can to leverage those dollars so that we can spread. That's the other way you benefit more people, is to leverage. But there may be some cases where we can't do that, but it's so critical that we've got to deliver that project. It's going to be tough, but we are familiar with those kind of tough decisions, and we will do everything we can to make strategic decisions that will benefit all of the citizens of the state.
Thank you.
Very good. Last comment from Senator Berger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Foster, I'm just going to take the opportunity of saying this to you while you're here, and I have an opportunity to do so. As a chair of the policy committee, it's impossible for me to share with you all of the work and all of the comments and the dialogue and compromise that went into some of this that we've brought to you in 71. But going back to the grants and loans, I think that some of the things that we hear from the public about accountability, and that we should show that the tax dollars are being spent wisely, and lottery dollars as well, that when you have a revolving loan and when money continues to come back, even if it was at 40% of the total amount, it shows something of good faith. It also makes our dollars stretch further. And so I don't believe that anything that was done here was not done with a great deal of thought. And on page 2, where it is crossed out after entities, one of the reasons for that being kept in there was a protection of the short line railroads, not anything that's against the big railroads. It's just another rural element there of people saying we need the protection of the short line. So thank you for letting me jump in and take an opportunity to have that conversation with you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to testify on the amendments? Forget that.
Senator Schrader, members of the committee, I'm Martin Callery. I serve as Director of Communications and Freight Mobility for the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay. In my role with the port, I'm also a member of OREL, which is the Oregon Rail Users League, and I have served on the Oregon Freight Advisory Committee. Now, the port very much supports Senate Bill 71. We believe that this package helps us in our role in rural Oregon of revitalizing our local economy. We've also seen some benefit from past legislation that really fits into the whole idea of what Senate Bill 71 is doing. To follow up a little bit on Chairman Foster's comments, when I served as chair of the subcommittee, project subcommittee of the Freight Advisory Committee, when we first started our work, we were looking at a very long road of identifying freight mobility projects. When we finished our list, there were more than 217 projects with a price tag of about $5.2 billion, if I remember correctly. Knowing that OTIA 3 had a fixed amount available for that, we had to fine-tune and go through criteria and priorities. We came back with a list of, I believe, 52 projects with a total price tag of $1.7 billion. It was, here again, putting together funding from various sources, OTIA 3, federal earmarks, a lot of other sources, that allowed us to move that part of OTIA 3 and other projects forward. We think this is the next right step for the state of Oregon to start making better investments in intermodal freight. In our case, marine is our primary responsibility, but we realize that marine is not going to be successful unless we have the other linkages. And so I just want to assure you that we very much support Senate Bill 71. It is critical to revitalizing very much the rural parts of our state. Parts of our state don't have intermodal linkages. They've had one mode and that's it. This is a way to strengthen those things and also add the linkages that are needed so that they can compete. We're a trade-dependent state, no doubt about it.
Thank you, Mr. Callaway. Any questions? Thank you very much for coming. I know you've come at a great distance to testify today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ken Armstrong. I'm here this afternoon representing the Oregon Short Line Railroad Association as well as the Oregon Ports Group. As such, I represent three of the four modes that are eligible for funding under this package. I don't want to take very much of your time except to say that both of those organizations consider Senate Bill 71 to be the preeminent legislation this session, and we very much want to thank our good friend Senator Berger, who has done has been such a supporter of railroads, of ports, and to have then this before a committee that has expertise in freight as this committee does. We appreciate that. And I have with me Mr. Robert Grossman from Genesee & Wyoming Railroad, and I'd like to turn it over to him to make a couple of comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Schrader and members of the committee for allowing me to speak. I'm handing in written testimony, so I'll be brief. My name is Robert Grossman, Executive Vice President of Government and Industry Affairs for Genesee and Wyoming and the Railroad Society of Portland Western Railroad here in Salem, Oregon. I'm really thrilled to see that Oregon's finally recognizing that rail and the other modes have a place in helping solve the transportation problems and issues of the state of Oregon. Rail has a lot of public benefits, even though they're privately owned, has a lot of public benefits of congestion mitigation, air quality improvement, fuel savings, low-cost transportation to help with economic development and jobs. So I think it's really important as part of the solution, and we're thrilled to be here and be supportive, very supportive of Senate Bill 71, and hopefully that's just the beginning because, as was stated, there's a lot of projects around the state that need to be done. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Very good. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to put a finer point on Mr. Grossman's testimony with respect to my personal knowledge of the economic development and job creation aspect. Mr. Grossman has partnered in my district, the Short Line Portland and Western, on the Lewis and Clark Explorer train. We actually have merchants who can track the arrival of those train passengers with goods departing off of their shelves, and Portland Western has been an enormously generous corporate citizen in helping make that train a reality, and I want to publicly thank him for that.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you.
A couple more people. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Schrader, members of the committee. My name is Laura Pryor, and I am the county judge from Gillam County. I chair the Association of Oregon Counties Transportation Committee. I am the chair of the North Central Act, and I am a wheat grower. And with this rain, I hope our county is shipping about 8 million bushels of wheat this year into international trade. I'm here to support Senate Bill 71 and to make some brief comments about it. We also support the amendment and support just about everything that's been said here today. One of the things that I would like to tell you is this. If you are going to make this massive investment, although I do agree that it's a shot in the right direction, I want to talk to you a little bit about the leverage of this and how that can actually happen on the ground. We trust the Oregon Transportation Commission to be able to deal with this. It is not going to be an easy issue, but they've tackled a lot of harder issues than this and been able to come through it, so I'm sure they're going to be able to do that. How it can work on the ground is that this money, this investment that you're making, can be leveraged with the Special Public Works Fund, our own lottery economic development dollars that you're all talking about here this year, bonds, local environmental. It can be leveraged with SBA money, EDA money, and federal maritime programs, just to name a few. So if we're all smart about how we do this and how we bring forth these programs, they ought to be able to be used across the state of Oregon, leveraged with different things to be able to really stretch these dollars. So if we don't think of these just in these, it's an isolated multimodal bill, if we think about how it can connect to other things, these dollars can really stretch. And the last thing I'd like to say to you is this, just a suggestion. As these dollars are paid off, since this amount has been targeted for multimodal, just consider that perhaps in the future, as they begin to be paid off, you roll them back in. You don't see this as an isolated package of a chunk of money that you put at this. When it's paid off, you go do something else with it. We are a maritime state. We are a Pacific Rim state. And if we are going to continue what we're doing, it might be helpful to think in terms of this block of money as rolling over in the same way, so that going on into the future, you could plan out ahead so that the money that's leveraged now through all these projects could be a phase or a piece of something that needs to go on into the future. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Fred Nussbaum. I represent the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates, AORTA, and as such, I represent two of the modes that are covered in this bill, the consumers of two of those modes. And I'm here to strongly support Senate Bill 71 -A with the -5 amendments. This is the only vehicle that we have this session for providing the much-needed capital for the passenger rail program. There's nothing else in the works. And in order to keep improving that service, we need to have a source of capital. So thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Very good. Anyone else feel a burning desire at this point in time? Very good. The chair will probably hold this over. It's our intention to pass this out. I'd make one point, and I am in favor of this bill.
various iterations, I don't have a problem, is that we should all keep in mind that the lottery bonds that back this currently are going to be paid for by the debt service comes out of our lottery dollars, which currently go to K-12 right now. So this will mean a reduction in K-12 funding, minimal amount this biennium, but much more significant this biennium. So we have to keep that in the back of our minds as we advocate for this sort of thing. There may be other alternatives in terms of funding, but I'm going to leave that to the House because I think this is an important piece of legislation for the reasons everyone here has talked about, quite frankly. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 71, and we'll adjourn for today.